From RunAsRadio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell and Greg Hughes. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 159 with guest Brent Ozar, recorded Monday, May 10th, 2010. Run As Radio is produced each week by Quap Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com. You can follow the boys on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you very much, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell. With me, as always, my co-host, Greg Hughes.
Hey, everyone. What's up, Richard? Welcome back from the road.
Yeah, a little month of traveling, you know? I realized the side effect of travel is, of course, it's like time travel. It doesn't feel like I was away for a month because I was working constantly.
Right. So where'd you guys go?
22 states, 6,200 miles in an RV that pulled to the left.
The whole time?
For the whole time.
Yeah. So kind of going around the world in left gear, huh?
Yeah. You know, it had its challenges, but we saw a lot of folks and we had a ton of fun. So it was a great tour and I won't be doing it again anytime soon, but glad I did it.
Cool. Well, good. Glad you guys had a good time.
Yeah. And it's fun to be back in the studio doing what we've always done and making some great shows. Because meantime, apparently, while I was running around for a month, Microsoft's been off shipping products. It's weird.
Yeah. There's been some announcements.
There've been a few, actually. So let's bring our guest into the equation and talk about some of those products. Brent Ozar is a SQL Server expert with Quest Software and a Microsoft Certified Master in SQL Server 2008. Brent has a decade of broad IT experience, including management of multi-terabyte data warehouses, storage area networks, and virtualization. In his current role, Brent specializes in performance tuning, disaster recovery, and automating SQL Server management. Previously, Brent spent 2 years at Southern Wine and Spirits, a Miami-based wine and spirits distributor. He has experience conducting training sessions and has several technical articles and blogs prolifically at www.brentozar.com. He's a regular speaker at PASS events, editor-in-chief of SQLServerpedia.com, and the co-author of the book, Professional SQL Server 2008 Internals and Troubleshooting. Welcome, Brent.
Hey, Brent. Thanks, guys. It's good to be here. So now I have to ask you, which one seemed longer, your road trip or my bio?
You know, what I like about your bio is we're obviously on the same page of things. I like the nitty-gritty tuning, tweaking, diagnosing what's going on. Like, I bet you and I are the only two people on the planet could really geek out on Perfmon.
Oh, yes, yes. I just love, you know, I absolutely love being able to walk up to a server I've never seen before, you know, lay my hands on it and go, aha,
yeah,
here's your problem.
Yeah. How are you feeling? That whole, you know, petting the server and saying, how are you feeling today? Yeah, I can answer that question.
Yes.
Hey, yes. Brent, SQL Server Master?
SQL Server Master. It's it's a really underknown certification. You know, not a lot of people know about this. It's fairly new.
Well, there's not very many of them, are there?
No, there are hardly any. As of today, there's 73 in the world, the majority of which work for Microsoft. Most of the folks, Microsoft certified or Microsoft Consulting Services employs a bunch of them, and very high end Microsoft engineers. And it's, you know, we've been struggling with the certification problem, both in development and database administration, that certifications just don't mean as much as they used to. You know, once the brain dumps came out, people just started Googling the questions. Man, the certifications went down the toilet. So Microsoft came up with this Certified Master program where you have to go to Redmond for 3 weeks, costs about $20,000.
Ouch.
And you learn from the best of the best. And even the $20,000, you know, it sounds like a lot, but then you have to factor in you're out of commission for 3 weeks. And a lot of these guys are consultants. And that between that and the travel and the hotels, you're talking about some serious money there.
Yeah, you eliminate your income, spend a bunch of money at the same time. Kim Tripp and Paul Randall are regulars on our show, and I think they're part of the instructing core of that program, aren't they?
Yes, they are the first week. They are just fantastic, aren't they?
Awesome.
To have them as the very first week of training really sets a fantastic tone and really makes you excited about what you're going to learn and what you're going to be tested on. And then the tests are brutal. It's nothing like the MCITP test that you're used to. It's every week you have a 2-hour test, written multiple choice test. And then at the end you have a 6-hour lab where you have to accomplish a whole bunch of things in an 6 hours seems like a really long time to accomplish something. Oh my God, I could have used 20 hours and I still wouldn't have done as well as I wanted to. But thankfully I passed.
But that sounds like there's a tremendous amount of infrastructure around the master program too. Because are you telling me they basically had a lab set up with messed up SQL servers you had to unmess?
Yeah. I can't, of course, I can't give the details of exactly what was going on, but you had your own environment there with
right.
servers already ready to go and, like business requirement docs so that, you know, that you pretty well knew what you had to do and what your constraints were and, you know, what the business needed. And then it was just up to you to get your hands dirty. It's a lot like Top Chef. You know, you see these guys who own restaurants and they're not used to getting
right.
behind the stove every day. And now suddenly you have to get right back behind the stove and you have to handle absolutely everything in a short amount of time.
So were you building a system from scratch or were you fixing something that was already there? Can you talk any detail there?
I can't in detail there. I can say that it's both. You do have to build things from scratch and you do have to repair things.
Okay.
So it literally, when they say a Microsoft certified master, when you walk out of there, you know an absurd amount of stuff about SQL Server and you've really proven it under fire. Very short amount of time, and it's one of those situations where you have a lot of good options. You know, DBAs always say it depends on how you implement something.
Right.
Well, you're under the gun, and if you have to say if you choose an answer, you've got to be able to justify why you built it the way you built it, and back that up. Just because you can do it a certain way doesn't mean you should.
So, was there a peer review element as well? Were there folks there looking and discussing with you the results? I'm thinking now of the architect's exam that Microsoft, I think, used to do, they don't do anymore, where it was very much a peer review model.
Yeah, no, they still do that. The MCA is the next step beyond the MCM. The MCM is a prerequisite now for the MCA.
I see.
So after you've proven your technical experience with the MCM, then you can go on and prove your project management experience with the MCA. Doesn't really call to me because I'm not too much of a management guy, but I love the technical side of it. So, but they have two very, very gifted guys, David Ikeda and Joe Sack, who review your work, and you have to document why you made the decisions you made, and you know what if you understood the ramifications of them, what the drawbacks were. And then they look at that and decide whether or not you had the right idea and whether you actually executed it properly.
Hmm.
It was the son of a gun. I don't, I certainly, thankfully, you don't have to renew it when there's minor versions that come out, like
right.
2008 R2, but I absolutely would love to do it again for the next major version of SQL Server.
And is that part of the process, is that you actually are going to have to routinely renew?
Your certification is good for life, so
right.
as long as 2008 is and 2008 R2 are sold, you don't have to keep renewing it every X years. But if you want to graduate and get the next, you know, certified on the next version of SQL Server, you have to do a written test and possibly the same lab that you have to do whether you're on site or not. So there's definitely a lot of work involved.
But it sounds like a shorter version for renewal.
Much shorter, and the cost is much lower. You're just paying to take the test. You don't have to shell out another $20,000
for the whole 2 weeks. Yeah,
which again sounds like a lot of money, but you would not believe how much it really has paid off. I can't tell you the number of times since that somebody from Quest has asked me or a community member has asked me, hey, how does this work? You know, how, can you tell me how we should build a solution to do this? And to be able to say with absolute certainty, you know, this is how I would do it. These are the parts that I know. These are the parts that I don't know. And of those things that I don't know, I know exactly who the absolute best people on the planet are to answer that question, and I can get you the answer
right.
in a matter of an hour or two.
Now, you wrote about this on your weblog too, right? It looks like you spent a couple of weeks just sort of giving people an idea.
I was surprised by how much they were willing to let me blog during the MCM itself, because it is really heavily NDA'd. Because MCM candidates can go in there and talk openly about their platforms, their problems, the things that they're running into. So I blogged every couple of days during the exam to let people know what it's like. Because you really don't get a good feel for it when you read Microsoft's site about how intense it is and what kind of studying you need to do. And man, is it in our day-to-day work? You know, it's been a long time since we got out of college, and people forget how to study or how to prioritize work when you're really just flooded with information.
I'm looking at this pre-reading list. It's huge.
Oh, yeah. Really, if you're going to do it, the So there's a pre-reading list that I link to on my blog that the MCM staff gives you. And it's several dozen white papers and links through books online. And when they link to books online, they say, for example, you need to know the replication parts of books online. You need to know the replication parts of books online. You can't waltz in there at the last minute with no experience. And sadly, I see a lot of people try that. Out of our rotation, only 4 of the 11 people in there passed. And that's pretty representative of what I've seen through other rotations as well. There's a pretty low pass ratio initially. Now, you get a couple of retakes where you can go through and retake the tests and the labs, but you only get 2 retakes, and then you're done. You're not ever going to be an MCM. So.
Wow. That's unusual. You know, my experience dealing with technical training is everybody passes.
Yes. You write the check, and you're in, right?
Yeah, you're in.
Yeah,
and this couldn't be further. They try and, you know, set you up for success by vetting people out. Not everybody even passes just because the prerequisites are so tough, but just because you get in through the prerequisites and you pass the interviews, that's still not the odds are not in your favor. You really have to know what you're doing.
Interesting.
Yeah, this reading list is epic. It's also a list of, like, so you have insomnia. How about check DB from every angle? That'll put you to bed.
It is amazing. And of course, some of the stuff, like Paul's blogs, those are a little easier to read, but a lot of the stuff is just dry white papers.
Right.
So I'm working with Quest is trying to put together a series of webinars. We're going to do one webcast a month, 2 to 3 hours long, where we're going to guide people through those prerequisites in a more fun environment. You know, that not everybody learns by absorbing these dry white papers. So I'm going to do free webcasts showing, all right, this is how replication works as far as the basics go. These are the things you need to know before you step foot in the MCM class. And after you've watched this series of webcasts, then you can go in with confidence and say, yeah, I think I do know enough to pursue the master course.
Yeah, I mean, I got to think that part of the NDA-ness of all this was to try and stop what happened with regular certification, where essentially the exams ended up in books.
Like, absolutely.
You learned the exam.
Yeah. I think there's 2 things that'll slow that down. One is the price tag is so high that the guys who walk out of this, you really feel like, I got my money's worth, but I don't want just everybody walking out with one of these certifications if they don't know what they're doing. You know, I want there to be an exclusivity and for it to really mean something.
Right.
And the other thing is the amount of prerequisite work that's required, that you have to go through an interview that you're probably not going to fake your way through. And because they can keep changing this exam at any time to change the scenarios, if they made just a couple of little changes in that 6-hour lab, there'd be no way you could fake it, you know, even if you knew what the last one was.
Well, and like I said, there's more than one correct outcome to any of those labs, too. So you'd almost be making it obvious that you're cheating if you had a perfectly identical lab result to a previous one.
Yeah. And none of us know the right answers either. We would get out of those exams, both the written exams and the labs, and we would argue furiously with each other about, why did you do it that way? Why didn't you choose this way? And we would, you know, sit and debate the pros and cons afterwards. And that was really exciting to be with this many very qualified people, you know, sitting around with a dozen of the best SQL Server people around, from consultants to data warehouse guys to programmers to MCS guys to MC or Microsoft support engineers, and to hear all these really good ideas from different angles. And, man, I mean, all the people who get in through there were just geniuses. It was downright intimidating to talk to some of them. Gert Drapers popped out and asked a question, just, you know, as trivia, and said, all right, when somebody connects to a SQL Server, how many network buffers does SQL Server reserve in memory? And one of the attendees just blurts out 3. And Gert says, okay, and how big are they? And this guy knew exactly. And I'm like, what on earth would you need to know that?
Why do you know that?
Yeah. And if you even had to know it once, why would you commit it to memory? You know, there are people who know this stuff to insane amounts of depth.
Well, and you got to know, anytime you know something like that, there's several weeks of pain that was earned on that one.
Yeah.
Like, he's obviously gone through a SQL Server that was struggling under the number of connections it had. And, you know, to be, to have that, to, I just feel the pain he's in right there.
Oh, yeah. Or the other opposite scenario is that somebody didn't know what they were doing and they screwed around with that setting.
Right.
Which, there's so many ways in SQL Server that you can screw around with the defaults, and next thing you know, you got a horribly performing SQL Server, and half of our job is just to slap people and say, don't touch that! Put that back the way it was! And then all of a sudden, things work again.
So, speaking of SQL Server, Mr. Master, 2008 R2 was just released, right?
Gone live to download last week, and then it goes out for wider distribution here shortly. But it's one of those kind of incremental releases. There's a whole lot of stuff outside of the engine. Power Pivot is huge for BI. I think that's going to have a big, long-lasting impact on the way end users interact with data. I can't stand Microsoft Access. It irks the bejesus out of me. And Excel is a much better user interface for letting power users slice and dice stuff when they can store stuff in SQL Server, but just use Excel as a front end. So I think that's going to have a really good long-lasting impact. Stream Insight is another technology that I don't know if developers are going to latch onto or not. I'm really curious to see how it works. But it lets you sample large amounts of incoming data. For example, if you're dealing with a stock market and you want to grab trades, or Twitter, you want to sample popular trending topics on Twitter. If you want to somehow manage huge amounts of incoming data with as little load as possible, Stream Insight will help you do that. But outside of those two, there's really not a whole lot that rocks my socks off for developers or database administrators, with the exception of the DAC pack that I believe we talked about a little last time when I was talking about virtualization in the cloud.
Uh-huh.
The DAC pack is Microsoft's way of letting developers build databases in Visual Studio and just do a whole end run around the database administrator. Because, I mean, really, you know, I hate to make you guys say the truth out on a webcast, but do developers really like database administrators out there?
No, when I was in that role, I had a sign on my door that said, no, any questions? Because I wanted to establish the relationship up front, right?
Yeah.
Why limit it to developers? I mean, does anybody That's really true. Like database administrators out there?
Yeah, project managers, QA people, not a whole lot of people like executives don't like database administrators. So the DAC pack lets you build databases inside Visual Studio. And you can hand this DAC pack, which really encapsulates your schema, to the database administrator and say, deploy this, and developers everywhere will love this one. DBAs can't even see what the heck is inside that unless they want to go trolling through XML files. Really, it's just designed almost as like an MSI that you can just hand your database administrator and say, here, go deploy this, go deploy an upgraded version, and the DBA has no control over the stuff that you're deploying. He's not going to be able to go through there and say, you should have put an index here, you should have changed this schema.
But if I was a DBA and I couldn't review it, I'd say no.
Yeah.
Yeah, so would I.
I think is the real thing that DBAs are struggling with. There's two major problems in the first version of the DAC pack the way it stands. One being that we can't really have control over what's going on inside of it, and we're not going to know what's happening until we go deploy that sucker, unless we go troll through XML files,
right,
which I've got better things to do. The other problem is that when you go to deploy a new version, let's say that we've got a 10 gig database, and you guys hand me a new DAC pack that I got to go deploy in production. SQL Server goes and makes a copy of that 10 gig database, applies your changes to it, and then swaps around names behind the scenes. Any custom security you'd put in there, some of the custom schema changes that you put in there would be vaporized and just gone. Any high availability or disaster recovery, if you were using log shipping or database mirroring, that's blown away. And then heaven forbid your database get popular and it gets above, say, 30, 40 gigs. It's going to take a while to make a copy of your data, and you don't want to do that in production. You're going to have to take the app down in order to
sure.
do it. And I just don't see that as practical in version one, but I'm really excited with the premise of where it's going long term.
Now, have you looked at the database edition of Studio?
Yeah, I glanced at it briefly back when the thing first came out.
Right.
Dude.
And you mentioned Girk Drapers because he was one of the guys who was originally on board with that. The thing that impressed me about that is from a developer's perspective, now I'm able to check my schema in as part of my app. But the best thing about it is this engine that takes a look at the schema you want to get to, looks at the database it's at, and spits out a script of how it would make the changes non-destructively. And it's in a form that you can hand to a DBA and say, here's what I'd like to do. And it's literally just the DML, right? It's the actual, here are the commands.
And isn't it so funny that, I mean, that came out in, I think, 2005, 2006?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the first version was in 2005, and 2010 just shipped. And now they've made it part of the premium SKU, so everybody's got it. And arguably, the best database management tool I've ever seen, and it's in developers' hands, like which I find bizarre. But for a DBA who actually wants to, you know, imagine not managing your change scripts. It manages them for you. You just think about schema.
And the frustrating part about DACPAC is that it steps back 5 years.
Yeah.
And really, you know, if you just keep using Visual Studio and database development inside there, you're going to be miles ahead of what we've got for the DACPAC for the next at least few years. So I don't really see the DACPAC catching on, but I'm very glad that they're bundling in the database features straight into Visual Studio, many more licenses than it was before.
Yeah, you know, we joke about not liking DBAs. I've known lots of DBAs that I like, but regardless of whether you like them or not, you know, you want to hire really good, smart people to do the job well, and that's one of those roles where you really need to be able to lean on them. So yeah, I don't know that I like the idea, like you're saying with the DACPAC, of them not having visibility and complete control over what's going on a production database server.
Yeah, I think if you've got a healthy relationship with your DBA team and the developers know that they can bring code to the DBAs first and say, hey, tell me where the weakness is, which is so much of what I do in performance tuning, is people will bring these schemas and say, all right, you know, what am I missing here? Why won't this scale? And you lose that with the DACPAC just altogether. So that can be kind of frustrating there.
Yeah, well, it almost seems like the teams aren't talking to each other because it feels like this problem was solved a while ago. Why are we doing it again?
Yeah, I see their vision. In a perfect world, imagine if it was closer like a virtual machine. Imagine that if developers could hand an encapsulated database and then the changes get managed, whether it's with DML or whether it's with some kind of change detection thing, to where it can look at any database out there and then migrate the changes seamlessly. Perfect examples at Quest, we ship database repositories for stuff, say Spotlight or say Foglight. The stuff lives in SQL Server, and we ship it to thousands of customers all over the world. But you know what happens when you give DBAs or developers something? They want to pop the hood, look inside, and play around.
For sure.
And so they'll go and add indexes, they'll go and change stored procedures, they'll go and change table definitions, and things will drift out of compliance. And then when our upgrades come around, all of a sudden the upgrade process chokes because somebody did something unsupported inside the database. Wouldn't it be nice if we had just one way of encapsulating databases and handing them off to people so that if you decided to add a stored proc, if you decided to add 5 indexes to a table, that we could have our stuff intelligently determine what should be kept and what should be thrown out? I love that Microsoft wants to go that way down the road.
Yeah, that sounds great.
Yeah, I don't want to manage change scripts and figure out detection and all those sorts of things. I want to say, here is the database I want. Figure out how to get there.
Yeah. I mean, imagine if our application deployment was that painful, that every single time we wanted to deploy an app, we had to do a bit-by-bit comparison across, you know, every assembly that was sitting on the client's desktop. Oh, that'd be miserable.
Yeah, and there was a time when we did that, where real patches changed the bits. You know, they didn't just replace whole sections of the app.
Or heaven forbid, any files, you know.
So it feels to me like R2 really is about taking business intelligence forward more than anything else.
I really think so. I think it's laying, Microsoft likes to say that they're doing down payments on things.
Right.
I see the DACPAC really as being a down payment towards something, but, you know, like any good bank wants to say these days, I just really hope that they continue making their payments because we've had just way too many foreclosures. If you look at SQL Server, we've had things like SQL Server notification services. We've had things like DTS, a service broker or CLR in the database, features that had a really nice down payment, and then it's almost like the features are on layaway. You know, we're kind of waiting to see what else comes. This is why I'm really excited about Power Pivot, is I think that just what they've got out of the box is fantastically useful. It tells a great story across Office, SharePoint, and SQL Server, and I would feel totally comfortable rolling that out today. The rest of it, I'm kind of taking a wait and see to see if they make that second payment.
Yeah, and that's always, that is the problem. I often feel like Microsoft throws stuff against the wall to see what sticks. And often we just got to stand back. Like, I wouldn't mind talking a little bit of CLR, because I thought it was a mistake at first. I would argue the CLR itself benefited massively from having to live inside of SQL Server, because it was the first time it had to live somewhere else. So that became a better product. For those of us who need to deal with the .NET framework all the time, we got a big benefit that we got a better product from that. But we still come back to the question, is this a good idea?
Yeah, and it's, how easy is it to shoot yourself in the foot?
Well, it's almost designed to be a gun that shoots both directions.
Yeah, no safety.
Yeah.
And there's such a huge gap between what the book says you can do and what you should really do in production. There's stuff that works great on your machine, and the only way you're going to find out that it's nasty is when you try and do a load test. And not enough people do load testing and unit testing out there, especially when it comes to stuff like CLR.
Right. Wait.
CLR was one of those things in the master program where I was just dreading it. I just was, you know, braced against the desk, you know, going, please, God, don't make me learn this. But, you know, when you see it in the environment of the MCM class, in somebody's hands who really knows how to use it, you see why it's useful. But
yeah.
The danger is you just really have to know what you're doing.
Yeah, and I think the number of scenarios is very narrow.
Very, very narrow. Only
projects.
Yeah, there's things in SQL Server that work that I would hand to anybody and say, go deploy it. Power Pivot being one of them. Mm-hmm. Fire away, knock yourself out. You're not going to shoot yourself in the foot, and if you do, it's going to be, you know, you're working with a BB gun, not a .45. You know, CLR, you've got the Desert Eagle going,
yep.
And you're going to do some permanent damage.
Yeah, you're going to make a big mess. But the vision around Power Pivot really has got to be this idea of self-service BI that you've done all this data warehouse work in the past, Brent. Do you see that with the way this infrastructure is moving now? Is that becoming less and less necessary?
I think that where we're moving towards, commodity hardware is able to handle so much more data now.
Right.
The last couple of weeks, I've dealt with two separate clients who had multi-terabyte data warehouses running on less than 10 grand worth of hardware, and because nobody told them they couldn't. You know, they were completely, if it takes, you know, 90 seconds for a query to execute, that's fine because it's results that I never would have gotten back before, you know, before I had my own business intelligence infrastructure. And that's great. And when people can do it in Excel, you know, just on the fly, I think we're going to see a whole lot more people saying the DBA and the BI team is responsible for building this shared storage of reliable data.
Right.
You're responsible for telling me how many widgets I sold and who I sold them to, but when it comes to using this information to make decisions, you just hand that over to me. I've got all the knowledge, me being mid-level managers with Excel, who understand the questions that they want to ask from a business perspective, and they understand Excel because it's a lovely tool and Microsoft just dominates the desktop. And they don't want to hassle with throwing in any other tools.
And you said the range of damage is fairly small in terms of burying resources, but my biggest concern with BI in the hands of the field folks is giving incorrect results, lying to themselves, essentially.
I get such a chuckle out of that because if I have the choice between, say I've got 10 mid-level managers and 5 of them are going to pick this stuff up, and they're going to get, probably 4 of them are going to get incorrect results because they're not going to understand how
right.
to group things or how to do whatever. And one guy is going to come up with correct results. Well, if I turn it around on its head and I say, with traditional BI, I would only be able to answer one of those questions anyway because I would have to put together an army of SSIS and SSAS guys They would have to vet the data. They would have to do all this stuff. And I might have a 3 or 4 month lead time before they could even get their questions answered. So I'm kind of okay with saying, all right, you mid-level managers, go ahead, fire away, do rapid iterations. And when you see something really interesting that you want to take action on, we'll try and reverse engineer what you did and figure out whether or not the numbers are legit. But at least get you running somewhere and doing something instead of waiting on these really long BI engagements that are only able to answer a limited amount of questions.
Yeah, well, and it's about getting results sooner, right?
Yeah, yeah.
As long as the results are accurate, you know.
Yeah, the accuracy is important there, yeah.
One of the things I've seen is that once you've got it into people's head to question the validity of the data,
yeah,
you paralyze their ability to move forward. That they will always, anytime you throw them a number they didn't expect, they question the validity of the data, and now you spend hours proving it's correct.
Yes. And I think we always end up with that, even if we have a really talented BI team. People are always going to go, that number doesn't seem right to me. So there's a lot around master data services too that I think is going to require a lot of evaluation from businesses. They're going to have to start thinking about those questions like, what does profit mean? You know, what numbers are really inside the word
right.
profit? And especially when you throw all this at Excel, are you sure you didn't edit that number?
Yeah.
Just how sure are you?
Right.
Well, and I mean, these are whiteboard questions too, right? Actually, building up the glossary of what these terms mean for this business, I think, is a huge part of the exercise of data warehousing in general, is actually agreeing that that's what that means.
Yeah, at least we're getting now to the point where the tools are working so fast that people can have these discussions faster and start saying, all right, what can we prototype to get into place and start making these decisions? Whereas now, you know, BI is such a hot topic, but you just can't hire SSIS or SSAS guys who can answer these questions. And now this just helps people move forward a little faster.
So when we had you on the show last time, we were talking about SQL in the cloud in general. Where do you see that? That was only a few weeks ago, to be honest. So where are you seeing things today?
I'm loving that Microsoft is opening up. They're doing a private beta first of 50 gig Azure databases. Our first initial limitations were 1 gig and 10 gig.
Yeah.
And I think that's cool, but that's just not realistic for anything other than Hello World. And 50 gigs, now all of a sudden you're talking, because you can start doing some fun stuff with 50 gigs worth of data. So they haven't really announced a whole lot in terms of really good feature sets. The feature sets haven't evolved, but just that they're willing to start growing load that fast is a great sign. I'm still not seeing anybody grab it with both hands, because you still have to roll your own sharding. That's just something that most developers are not going to be comfortable with. Well, most DBAs are not going to be comfortable with either. Nobody really likes rolling their own sharding.
Yeah.
But as that gets, as either somebody builds a standardized sharding tool that works better, or if Microsoft builds it into the platform, then all of a sudden I think we're going to see a spark.
Well, Brent, I think we're just about out of time here. Any last words, things we should be looking at and thinking about?
No, if you're out there and you're wondering, you know, the whole Microsoft Certified Master thing, you know, is this right for me, or you know, how far away from it am I? Check my website. I've got a lot of articles on there about what the test is like or what the experience is like. And I really encourage you to think about it, maybe throw it in your budget or ask your managers to throw it in your budget for next year. Of course, they're not going to say yes right away, but you just start planting that seed. And if your company has Microsoft Premier agreements for support, you can actually use Premier consulting hours or your Premier support hours to pay for your MCM.
Interesting.
So just throw the idea in your boss's head there that, hey, if we've got MCM or Premier hours left over at the end of the year, I want those because I can use them to pay for an MCM. And next thing you know, you can be in a really elite group. And I tell you what, it really does make a difference for your career.
Brent Ozar, thanks so much.
Well, and right there at the top of your blog, there's a MCM link, so easy to find.
Click it and learn.
Brent, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thanks, guys. I really appreciate
thanks,
you having me.
And we'll talk to you next week on Run As Radio.